Security strategy paper. It never mentions Russia's invasion of Ukraine, but devotes considerable space to deploring Europe's supposed civilizational crisis. No wonder a Kremlin spokesman said the paper, quote, corresponds in many ways to our vision. Thomas J. Friedman of the New York Times writes that only Trump, among all our presidents, seeks to be, quote, an arbiter who tries to make a profit from each side in the process. This is one of the most shameful episodes in American foreign policy, and the entire Republican Party is complicit in its perpetuation. I'm Mel Gertob for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertoff, Carmel Pierre-Louis, and Lizard. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Carmina Flores. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Frida Ross, and Farah Siddiqui. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-the-year fundraising drive, and it's our goal to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
Are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. The Trump administration is making drastic changes to the American immigration system, particularly moving people with a lawful immigration status to a new category, unauthorized. American Community Media Associate Editor Pilar Morero convened a panel of experts on Friday, December 5th to explore the issue.
Today, we are examining a profound shift in U.S. immigration policy. How the Trump administration is taking groups of immigrants who have lived here legally, some for years or decades, and finding a way to reclassifying them as unauthorized or taking away status from people. These include DACA recipients, TPS holders, humanitarian parole beneficiaries from Cuba, Venezuela, Ukraine, Afghanistan, and others. Through executive action, DHS policy changes, and new litigation positions, the administration is effectively canceling the lawful status of entire communities, or at least attempting to. More than 2 million people nationwide could be, in the end, included in this if it goes fully through. This fundamentally reshapes what legal immigration means in the United States. Our panelists today are Hiroshi Motomura, he's co-director of the UCLA Center for Immigration Law and Policy. Adelis Ferro, she's executive director of the Venezuelan American Caucus. Laura Flores Perilla, she's a staff attorney at the Justice Action Center. Jeremiah Johnson, he's a former immigration judge and recently elected vice president of the National Association of Immigration Judges. And we have Andrea, a dreamer and DACA activist. She will only be identified by her first name and will keep her camera off to protect her identity for obvious reasons. Okay, let's just dive right in. And I want to start with Professor Motomura Hiroshi. Let's start with a general question. How is the administration redefining what it means to be in the country legally?
Well, that's a very important question. And this involves, as you suggested in your opening remarks, taking status away from non-citizens who have lawful status today. So they have it today, and they won't have it tomorrow or some point in the future if the administration gets what it wants. I think the first thing to understand is that U.S. law has many different lawful immigration statuses. There's, of course, citizenship. There's lawful permanent residence, or what some people call a green card. But it also has many statuses that I think sometimes people call in between. But they're not long-term lawful statuses, but they come with work permits. And these statuses are definitely lawful. And many people in these statuses are in the process of applying for a green card or a long-term status. So you name some of the examples: temporary protected status, rescissions, not just expiring to temporary protected status, which is a form of humanitarian protection, but also taking it away. Another is a status called parole, which is permission to be in the country, either taking that away or having it expire. It remains to be seen what will happen with deferred action for childhood arrivals, or DACA. These are all statuses that are lawful, but this is the focus of the administration's efforts. I should also mention that the administration has announced re-examining and possibly taking away durable status, or taking away green card status, lawful permanent resident status, that has already been granted. This may be especially based on asylum and refugee admissions, asylum grants and refugee admissions. In other words, you get a green card, you're on a path to a green card, but the administration wants to re-examine this. The administration's also quite intent on denaturalization of citizens. In other words, people become citizens, they come as immigrants, they become citizens, to take that away, looking back into past cases. And we don't know what the patterns will be. I should also mention two other things. I know there's a lot to cover here today, but let me mention two [S2] Yes. [S1] Other things. One is the administration has announced its attempt to redefine what it means to be a U.S. citizen. So we can talk about lawful statuses being taken away, even green cards taken away. But the executive order that the administration issued earlier in 2025 would actually take citizenship away from people unless they had, traditionally U.S. citizenship is based on birth on U.S. soil, and this would require you to have either a citizen parent or a lawful permanent resident parent. The administration has said that this will only apply into the future, but actually the executive order would redefine citizenship for all time. And so in that respect, if that is approved, that's going to take citizenship away from many people who have it today.
One of the recent announcements by the administration has been referred to by one of our reporters, and I'm going to take her question, Fatme Bahit. And it's the case of, what happened after the Afghan individual who actually worked with the United States in Afghanistan, trained by the CIA there, who is now a refugee in the United States, opened fire and killed a National Guard member in DC and hurt another. And then after that, the president announced, the administration announced a couple of things, but one of the things that was announced was suspension of all processes of immigration for 19 countries, of which Venezuela is one of them, my country of birth. What does this mean? He's stopping like green card cases. What does this mean for people, Professor?
Well, I think one of the things, the practical thing is that a lot of processes that people have been counting on, that they're actually legally entitled to, are being stopped. And so it remains to be seen how lawful this is. There are aspects of the announcements that I think strongly reflect religious and racial discrimination, but the administration will cite national security. So I think that will be fought in the courts. I think that another thing is that people are not going to apply for things. So the practical effect of this is much broader than the legal effect. I think what the administration's been doing in much broader perspective is they're making some people feel they belong and some people feel they don't belong. So there are people who are afraid to travel. There are people who qualify to become citizens, but I know people who are afraid to apply for naturalization. They're afraid to speak out. There are many, many things going on here that are, I think it does mean that there's a pause on actually people getting benefits, but I think that a lot of the administration's intent in this situation is to scare people and to make them feel not welcome.
So I would imagine that there's some precedent to this. I mean, I remember in the history of the United States, there was, you know, the Chinese Exclusion Act and, you know, excluding people based on where they come from. Mm-hmm. So we're going back to that. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, if you look at this in historical perspective, a couple of things to say about that. I mean, one is that the immigration system of the United States has been operating in this very informal way for generations. You can come to the country lawfully, but those ways are very narrow. And so the system has tolerated and invited people to come to work undocumented. But they've also had a lot of these statuses that are like temporary protected status or parole. I think the administration is trying to say that those are all illegitimate in some way, but in fact, they've been part of the U.S. immigration system for generations, certainly going back to the end of World War II, and really even beyond. That's one thing to say. In terms of historical perspective, I think the intensity that we are seeing out of this administration is unprecedented, because it is doing exactly what this webinar is about. It's going after people who already have lawful status. So the system changed in 1965 to become much more, at least on the appearance of it, neutral. I mean, I think it's not totally as neutral as people think, but it's a neutral system compared to what before. But there's a strong sense that the administration wants to, at least my interpretation is, the administration wants to turn back the clock to a period around 1900. In other words, to return to a system that was much more focused on European immigrants and preferring European immigrants. And so that I think is driving the intensity of the efforts by the administration now. Strong sense of that we're being invaded. The word invasion appears in many, many of the documents, including the presidential executive orders. I think previous administrations have been intent on slowing down the change, the demographic change in America. But I think this administration wants to turn back the clock to the year 1900, as if the 20th century didn't happen. And this has led to much more aggressive measures than we have seen historically.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm going to move on to Laura Flores Perilla. She works with the Justice Action Center. The center is involved in a number of litigation, a number of lawsuits against the administration's immigration policies. And Laura, can you talk a little bit about the situation of people who have humanitarian parole, including the CHNV parolees, and explain for those who may not be familiar with that, with what it means and how it worked until now?
Sure. Thank you, Pilar. So parole has been a tool that administrations from both sides of the aisle have used for the past seven decades to not only provide a legal and safe pathway to the United States, but to also provide individuals with the ability to work in the United States in response to grave humanitarian crises that are happening in other countries. I think folks are familiar with the CHNV parole program for Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans, and Venezuelans that came about under the Biden administration. But there are many more, like Uniting for Ukraine, Operation Allies Welcome, and others as well. And on the second day of Trump's second term, he, you know, announced his intent to terminate humanitarian parole, specifically targeting the CHNV program, but also just parole in general. And this is all part of the Trump administration's campaign to delegalize and strip as many people who do have lawful status as possible, and to make them vulnerable even more so to things like deportation and removal. And that's what we're fighting for in one of our cases, Svetlana Doe versus Noam. For parole recipients who, you know, have lawful status, and did everything that the government, the federal government, asked of them in terms of applying for parole and being eligible for parole, and are now having the rug essentially pulled out from under them and stripping them of revoking their parole status. And this is unprecedented and cruel. And so that's what we're working on in that litigation. And it's just, you know, another example of this unprecedented mass delegalization that's happening with for folks in the United States who have lawful status, like parole.
In one of the cases, I don't know if it's in the one that you just mentioned, you are challenging the application of expedited removal of these people that are here legally, came in with these programs, meaning they wouldn't be able to fight their case, they wouldn't be able to defend themselves, they would just be shipped out. Has this started to happen yet? Have people started to be sent out already from these cases?
It's certainly started, and that's in regards to our other lawsuit, Churla versus Nome, in which the administration began targeting individuals who have parole, whether that's humanitarian parole or CBP-1, asylum seekers who entered the country on CBP-1 parole. Essentially, for these individuals who may have other avenues for relief and who are attending immigration court hearings, I think heard in the news like several months ago that these individuals attending these hearings would have their case dismissed, and then ICE would round them up and detain them and subject them to this process, fast track deportation process called expedited removal. And so that's what that case is about. And it does center on individuals who entered on parole and them being subjected to this fast track deportation process that doesn't have any due process built into it, or an ability to fight your case because it happens so quickly, the deportation process, and how these paroled individuals are not, by the law, are not supposed to be subject to this process, this fast track expedited removal process. And so this is just another way of subjecting these individuals, not only delegalizing them, but subjecting them to deportation in an expedited way. And fortunately, in that case, we were able to secure a win temporarily where the court agreed with us and blocked the administration's policies that they were relying on to subject paroled individuals to expedited removal. And since then, we've seen a number of parolees no longer be subject to expedited removal. We've seen these numbers go down. However, you know, in some ways, it's still continuing to be an issue in terms of the government seeking other ways to subject these individuals to this process. But fortunately, you know, despite that, with advocacy from individuals and their attorneys, we've been able to see these numbers go down and there be a measurable difference since that case has been filed.
So we can say that the legal system is still working at this point.
I would say so, although there's still much work to be done in terms of securing a more permanent form of relief on this issue and in our other parole case as well. But it's important to also secure those preliminary reliefs and hopefully have those make some sort of difference in protecting our communities in the meantime while litigation goes on.
Yeah. Thank you, Laura. Stay around. We're going to move on to another panelist. And I want to invite Adelis Ferro. Adelis, she's a Venezuelan activist from the Venezuelan American Caucus. Adelis, welcome. Adelis, Venezuelan families have endured years of shifting policies, TPS, humanitarian parole, and now the threat of losing both. What are you hearing in the community today?
What I am hearing is over and over, every single day is terror, fear, exhaustion, and betrayal. Venezuelan families have spent years doing everything this country asks for them. Not only Venezuelan families, every single immigrant family, but speaking about Venezuelans, they register for TPS, they apply for work permits, they show it up to court. They pay their taxes. They build small businesses. Their kids are in our schools, churches, universities. And now they are being told that overnight, 600,000 lives could go back to zero. About TPS, people describe it as living in permanent temporary status. Every announcement, every court decision, every headline can change their future in a second. And that's the way it has been happening so far. In our WhatsApp groups, our hotline, our community meetings, the messages are all the same. What's going to happen to my children if I lose my work permit? Should I stop driving because I am afraid of being pulled over? Is it safer to move, to disappear? What is going to happen with my children if I get detained? What is going to happen with my US-born children if I get detained? There is also a deep sense of unfairness. Venezuelans are fleeing a dictatorship, as you all know. Political persecution, hunger, and now even the threat of war. And yet they're treated as if they were a danger instead of people escaping danger. This is where we are. Our families feel like they are being used as political bargaining chips for months now, actually for years, but more than ever before in 2025. One day we were welcome in the United States, the next day we are disposable. So the mood right now is a mix of fear, fatigue, and a very quiet but strong determination not to give up and to fight for their rights. And we will stay with them every single step during this fight.
Thank you, Delis. Can you give us a little update on what's going on with the TPS cases that you're watching, you know, the concerns of Venezuelans?
Well, right now, the actual TPS lawsuit, which, by the way, is led by the CILP and ACLU, NorCal and SouthCal, is in the Ninth Circuit Appeals Court. And we know it's going to take a while until we have an answer from them. But because of the decision of the Supreme Court, the latest decision granting the state to the government, no matter what happened on the appeal court, has to go to the Supreme Court right after. So sadly, we can have a decision even after October 2026, which was the deadline for the extension that the Biden administration gave to the Venezuelan community. In the other hand, right now, in actually almost half an hour, we will have another hearing in a district court in San Francisco, Judge Chen Court, where our lawyers, our amazing lawyers, are presenting a new filing, trying something different to see if there is a chance to protect as many Venezuelans with TPS as possible from deportation and to protect their work permits. We are looking for different ways to support them, to help them, especially giving them as much information as possible, because that's the most important resource that they can have right now. The worst part of the Venezuelan crisis in the United States is that we don't have a consulate in the United States. We don't have an embassy. We don't have a political representation. So even if people want to leave or self-deported, we don't have passports. We don't have IDs. Many of them don't have anything that identify them as Venezuelans. So even if they want to leave, it is a complete mess trying to do it. I just wanted to say that too.
Yes. It's good for people to know this. Thank you, Adelis. I want to welcome Judge Jeremiah Johnson. Judge Johnson was an immigration judge in San Francisco until recently. He was let go of that position. He's not the only one. The administration has been purging the immigration courts of certain judges and announcing that they will look for deportation judges. So, Judge Johnson, thank you for being with us. How does your removal from the bench fit into the broader restructuring of immigration courts under this administration?
And thank you very much for having me. I think my removal not only fits with the broader pattern of removal from judges. But in what we were talking about before, I see the similarities of illegality to legality to illegality. A number of things that my co-presenters have touched on. We're talking about people that used to come to court and now they're scared to come to court. And so once when they were in a legal status pursuing legal pathways, their failure to appear at court will result in an order of removal. And then all of a sudden they then become illegal. So that legal status that they had, this pending status, I used to call, people would ask me, you know, what status do I have? It's a pending status, you're an asylum seeker. So they no longer have that. And so they, by removing judges, you remove, so you remove that portion that I've fit within. But also by firing judges, you're removing judges. We talked about losing status or re-examining status. I would tell people that you are a lawful permanent resident until I, as a judge, say so. Even if the department were to remove your or try to terminate your asylum status, that can be reviewed in front of an immigration court. You always have that ability to have that status reviewed by a judge. But if you remove judges, remove courts, you're removing that process of review. You're turning people that once had legal status into this illegal status. So that with the detentions, that you're placing people in detentions into the expedited removal proceedings, placing them back into a status, reversing the clocks. I heard that was, those were things that were occurring, and that really was a difficult challenge for judges to address. So when you see the judges firing, I think you see the administration trying to circumvent the law, to circumvent judges and courts to just go forward with this program.
And so we have Andrea, she's a dreamer. Andrea, can you please talk a little bit about your story?
Yes, my name is Andrea. I am a dreamer and immigrant rights organizer. I came to the US when I was 5, so I've been in the country for about 20 years now. I qualified for DACA, I met all the qualifications, and right as I was about to apply, the Trump administration rescinded the program. And then I applied again in 2021 when the applications briefly opened, and my application has been on hold since. So ever since then, I mean, I went to school. I grew up in the DMV area, DC, Maryland, Virginia. I went and got my bachelor's degree, and now I'm currently in grad school getting my master's of science in public policy and management. And I'm right now, I'm like most dreamers, at a crossroads of what to do next. Where am I going to go? I'm in this sort of what scholars would say liminal status of I'm neither here or there, and trying to figure out what my next steps are.
How has this affected your daily life, your sense of stability?
I think this isn't particularly new, the sort of lack of stability that's been going on for years and years. As I want to echo some of the words that Adeli said, you know, we've lived in fear for years, majority of my life, if not all my life. Policies aren't just paper. They shape every part of my day, things that I think most people take for granted, such as renewing your license. And I mean, now with the Real ID, having that and evokes more discrimination and lack of resources. And as well as just applying for a job, I'm not sure what I'm going to do after I graduate. I mean, I'm very fortunate to be in school and have gotten this far, but there's a lot of dreamers who like to go to school. And, you know, there's states across the country where that's not possible. So it creates a lot of instability, and we're seeing right now a wave of undocumented individuals who have gone to college, are in college, are going to graduate, if not graduate already, and don't know what to do. They can't work. We're being told by the administration to self-deport to a country that we did not grow up in. And like myself, I'm thinking, should I move to a different country? But ultimately, I've lived here my whole life. I want to contribute to this country. My friends, my family, I've built my entire life here. Every day is different. Every day we're seeing different stories, different policies roll out. I mean, just yesterday, the DREAM Act was reintroduced for,
yes.
I'm not even sure. I mean, this is since 2001. So the it's
been 25 years. Yeah.
It's practically the amount of time that I've been on this earth. So, you know, every day is different. I'm just trying to survive, and I just want to be able to live my life without having this looming threat over my head and feeling persecuted. And I mean, now more than ever under this administration, that has become very clear that we are under threat, regardless of whether you have a liminal status or whether you are fully undocumented or whether you are a resident or even now U.S. citizens.
All right. Well, thank you, Andrea. Thank you for that. That was very heartfelt. And we appreciate you coming to share your story.
That was a panel discussion hosted by Pilar Morero, the associate editor at American Community Media. Panelists were talking about the Trump administration's drastic changes to the American immigration system, particularly moving people with lawful immigration status to a new category, unauthorized. You've been listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for being with us.
Know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch to snag some KBOO swag to support community media